Hello, welcome to Books in the Biz, a podcast that looks at both the financial and operational sides of success. Please welcome our hosts, Dan Paulson and Richard Veltre. Dan is the CEO of Envision Development International, and he works with leaders to increase sales and profits through great cultures with solid operations. Rich is CEO of the Veltre Group and a financial strategist working with companies to manage their money more effectively. Now on to the podcast.
Welcome back to Books in the Biz. Here we are. Rich, how are you doing?
I am doing well. How are you?
I am doing good. I'm doing good. Seems like it's a long time since we talked to each other. I think a whole 5-10 minutes maybe, right?
I don't know. I'm not even sure it was that long.
Might not have been that long. But anyway, our episode today is basically, I'm calling it after the webinar. So we just did a webinar called Built to Last or Built to Leave. And basically talking about what you need for succession. And I thought, you know, what the heck? Let's take 20 minutes to kind of do our own debrief here and maybe, you know, I'll share a couple slides that we got from the event. We're not going to redo the entire event, but we can give you a kind of a peek into some of the concerns that we had, which was what we were bringing up here. So let me share this. Move this over here. We don't need to show the whole thing, but how do you think it went?
Well, I thought it went well. I mean, I think we definitely have organized the fact that, you know, it doesn't always come down to the financial, you know, and I think vast majority of what we talked about in the webinar was not financial other than maybe alluding to it. And so I think it really kind of comes down to a little bit more to the owner's mental state or mental capacity to, you know, talk about this subject, because it's a difficult subject. You know, it's coming to a close, or as we said in the seminar, you know, it's really not coming to a close. It's leading the company to where it's going to go after you maybe relinquish control. So that doesn't necessarily mean end. And I think that's something that people need to get past. And don't call it end, because you may still be involved with it after you relinquish control, but, you know, set it on a path that makes sense, because you want that legacy to continue.
Yeah, well, and in some cases, you might not even relinquish control right away. Maybe it is more of a gradual sell-off. You know, you probably worked with or know of some ESOPs out there where, you know, maybe the owner still has a lot of controlling interest for like the first 3 to 5 years before enough other employees buy out that equity. So there's a number of different ways that it can go. We try to touch on things that I don't think are always discussed in other topics related to succession and open up questions from the group on it. And, you know, I think we covered some key points, but like you said, you know, a lot of this is really boiling down to it's more about the owner, the emotion that's tied in. Some of the challenges are more internal, really, when it comes down to talking about things like succession. It's building comfort in, you know, maybe things aren't perfect for you, and you know, nobody always wants to share the things that aren't working right. We always love sharing when things are going extremely well, but you know, it's the things that aren't working right are really the things that we've got to fix. If we are going to pass the company on to somebody else, because that's where the value, that increased value is going to come in. You know, so I pulled up one of the slides here, the succession gap. You know, I should have a plan, but, you know, we always make excuses of why not or why not now. And it's everything from don't have time to it's too early. You know, the team's not ready, too complicated of a process. All these things are good excuses, but really think of all the other stuff. You know, I don't have time. Well, did you ever have time to start a business? You must have made time for that. And I'm sure there's client needs, there's employee needs. You still end up making time for those things. As far as too early, you know, maybe we should spend more time talking about this. A number of examples that we brought up in the podcast were situations where, you know, the owner admitted that they weren't ready to sell yet, but due to health reasons, due to accidents, due to a number of other issues that were unexpected, it kind of forced their hand. And then it's a mad scramble to actually get it done.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the conversation that we had, really, when you talk about it's too early, you know, I don't think there is any too early. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be where you are ready to do a full-blown plan,
mm-hmm. right?
Where you're really nailing down to this is what's going to happen. Maybe it's just a little bit of how can I start to prepare, you know? And for that, I'm starting to look at it internally. I'm starting to look at it myself and saying, you know, I'm not ready to retire for another 10 years. Should I just, you know, use one of these excuses and not think right. about it anymore? Or should I say, well, this year I made this much, or, you know, if I take this and I assume what some of the adjustments would be on a buyer, you know, what would my value be? And what would my right. value proposition be? What would my growth rate potentially be? You know, what can I assume that I can grow this to, so that when I'm ready to actually pull the trigger on the you know, retirement or on a true succession, you know, what value would I want to be at? You know, maybe I'm not there. Maybe I'm off a little bit. Maybe my calculations change over now to 10 years from now. But I have that option because I'm starting to think about it now, as opposed to waiting 10 years and then say, okay, I'm done.
Yeah,
because I can't have any options at that point. You know, once I say I'm done, that really means I'm done, and I take whatever value I can get.
And, you know, sometimes that's okay. I mean, there are certain businesses that I would call the more lifestyle business. You know, it provides a good lifestyle for you. It provides a good living. Maybe, you know, it provides you with enough to put away for retirement. So you just do, you know, put up the close sign and call it a day. But, you know, we mentioned in the podcast or in the webinar about some of our other podcasts. And when we were talking with Paul Curtis a couple of weeks ago, he mentioned that about 90% of the people that he's meeting with are counting on the sale of their business as being their retirement fund. So when you consider that there's that high of a percentage that are counting on that business to provide enough for them so that when they're no longer working, they can still maintain you know, at least as close to the same lifestyles they had while they were working in their business. That to me is a huge factor and right. something we all got to consider.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, the other thing maybe we didn't talk a lot about is that, you know, a lot of these business owners that are coming up against this now are the baby boomers, right? They're at mm-hmm. that point where they're already in that retirement phase and they're looking to figure out, you know, what's the next step, you know, mm-hmm. and the prediction right now in the financial markets is that there's, I forget, some ridiculously high number, like 80 to 140 trillion is the range. They're basically looking at in the trillions of dollars of wealth transfer from these businesses that either need to go to a child or, you know, down to the next level, or they need to be sold. Because otherwise the businesses will close. So the expectation is you've got $80 to $140 trillion of business value that's going to transfer to another owner over the course of the next, say, 20 years. And so when you start to think about that, you know, I want my biggest piece of the possible pie.
Right.
You know, because 20 years from now, I'll be 75. So I would be, you know, I would love to take, you know, advantage of that pie while there are people who are actually interested in it, because I don't know what it'll be in 20 years.
Exactly. So
why can't I get involved now? Why would I want to wait till the end of my 20 years and 20 years from now say, gee, I wonder what the value is left and how many buyers are still available to buy my business at that point? Because what if they've all bought businesses up to that point and I'm the last one at the table? You know, the run of the litter, the last dog gets no
pretty much
doesn't eat.
Yep. Well, and there is going to be some truth to that because we have fewer and fewer people being born. So you figure 20 years from now, you know, you're talking about the kids that are probably in grade school getting to the point maybe in their career where they would start thinking about buying a business. And are there going to be enough people to buy the companies that are going to be out on the marketplace? So you really have to put yourself as the the most attractive girl on the dance card, if we're going to use other analogies here. You know, you got to be the one that they want to talk with. And that's going to be a big part of when you look at selling. You know, what's your competition look like? If you can look across your industry for similar businesses like yours, and there's going to be other ones out there, you know, what's going to make your business more attractive than theirs? Are the balance sheets clean? Is it profitable? Can that profit be shown to go to the bottom line? You know, we're going to use Paul Curtis a lot here because we've had him on a couple times, but it's, you know, he's talking about things where there's add backs, and depending upon how you take money out of the business affects how you can add money back in towards the value of that business, of that asset. And if there aren't ways that he can backtrack and say, well, this is where that money went and this is why it's an expense, and now that expense goes away when you take over the business, it's very hard to justify the number that you probably want to get.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, right? Because I think for some people, it's a change of how they may have managed their businesses up to this point, right? I mean, there's plenty of people out there who are fighting for the lowest price option, right? They want to be they want to be the most efficient because they want to sell it at the best price and they can beat everybody else in the market. Right. Now, that's still a competition with your competition, right?
Right.
It's still that you are competing for the sale. Now, when you compete for the sale of your business, you don't want to race to a lower price. You want to race to a higher price.
Right.
So you do have to change a little bit of which way you're trying to look at this. But it's still the same game. It's still the same process. You're still trying to beat the other player, you know, at whatever game it is you guys are trying to play. So your strategy has to switch. You don't want to be the low price. I mean, if you're already a high price player, you're already selling things at a higher price, you already know the game.
Right.
You're a leg up already because you're already able to sell because your product is better. Okay, and you're not forced to get into a punting game over let's get the lowest possible price and beat the other guy out. So if you're already in that game of, you know, selling things at a good value and having the best product, now just sell the business the same way.
Right.
You're the best business.
And you got to look at opportunity, I guess is the best way to explain it. You have to be able to share that story, that opportunity that your business is over somebody else's business, showing growth. That buyer has to see what heights they can take your business to versus where you're at. If they see something that's going to require a lot of fixing up in the beginning, it's going to be very costly that way, it's going to be very hard to convince somebody to buy on for a good price. They're going to want to lowball the offer because they realize they're going to have to make significant investments in talent, possibly equipment, possibly buildings, and then there's the whole sales aspect of it. So then you start looking at the numbers. We touched a little bit on due diligence, but maybe, you know, you could talk more about that here. Is, you know, there's a whole due diligence process that goes in. So there could be a letter of intent given for a specific amount of money that they're willing to buy the business for, but that's based on a number of contingencies. It's based on once they dig into the books and do some of the forensic accounting, what are they going to find? Are they going to find something out that they didn't like or that really is going to detract from the profitability of the business? And then it's going to lead to them, you know, wanting to pull out of the deal or significantly reduce the deal. And, you know, you've probably dealt with some situations like that where, you know, you're going through the paperwork and all the numbers, and all of a sudden numbers aren't adding up the way they should, or there's something that wasn't mentioned. And we're not saying that anyone's trying to be deceitful on it, but there's a lot of information that gets shared, and sometimes you don't realize what's important until somebody else starts asking.
Yeah, I think, you know, first point, you know, everybody likes to talk about EBITDAs and add backs.
Right.
Okay. You come up with your EBITDA, you do your add backs, because the goal here is somebody wants to buy they want to put a multiple on your normalized earnings. So they use EBITDA, right? And then they, you know, figure out what a normalized every year, what they can expect the business should do. So they go through and they take everything out that's an anomaly or a one-time expense. Okay. So they take that out and come up with normalized EBITDA. And then they apply a multiple to it. And that's where, you know, you want to get to adjusted EBITDA. You want to add back anything that, you know, oh, when I take this business over, I'm not going to have that expense. Okay. So they'll do that as an add back. And that actually helps you out because it raises your value. Problem is, they're not all add backs. Okay. Mm-hmm. They can be negative. They can be the wrong way.
Right.
Okay. So everybody likes to talk about the add back because that makes it like, oh, the value is so much bigger and everything's so much more wonderful. Okay. Then you hit the one that takes you the other way.
Yep.
And everybody, and all of a sudden it's doom and gloom, clouds come over, you know, lightning strikes, you know, it's crazy stuff. Right. Because nobody wants to talk about the bad one. All right. But they happen.
Right.
And the other thing you want to make sure of, like you said, due diligence. You know, I had one example where somebody came in and I thought the books were the cleanest I had ever seen. They were perfect. There were a lot of people working on them for a long time. They were audited. There was no audit adjustments. And all of a sudden somebody said, did you pay all your sales tax? Have you paid all the sales tax on? And we're looking at it going, you know, we rent space. Like majority of what we did, we had warehouses all over the country and there was all these rentals. But the problem is sometimes when you do the build out of that warehouse, you buy personal property. And when you buy the personal property, certain places will actually tax personal property under the sales tax laws.
Right.
And two of our biggest warehouses were in Indiana, and Indiana does that.
Mm.
So we had to go back and now do an additional piece of an audit to basically see, did we pay all the sales tax we should have? And there were a couple pieces there that we didn't pay sales tax on and we knew it.
Mm.
Now we had to go back and kind of extrapolate, what's the risk? What's our number? What's, you know, what's the expectation here that we're going to sell this to someone who's coming in as a partner. And when they come in as a partner, they could be on the hook for the sales tax.
Right.
Okay. So we had to indemnify them. We had to do all these legal steps. And I forget the amount of money that it was going to cost. They wanted to put it in reserve or they wanted to pay it. They essentially, the existing owners realized the mistake, said, we'll take care of it. And they were basically telling the new guys, you won't have to worry about it at all. But it was a costly piece. It was a costly number. So, you know, you never know what you're going to find when someone asks a question that you didn't know to ask or you didn't think to ask, you know, or internally it just got missed.
Right. And you need to protect yourself as much as the other person's protecting themselves. So this is where knowing more in the beginning and really preparing, looking at those numbers ahead of time, it's almost like doing a home inspection before you sell your house. It can really be helpful to minimize some of that risk. I don't think you're going to catch everything, nor should you expect to. The main thing you're trying to do is minimize the surprises to yourself, to anyone else that's looking to buy the business. The more prepared it is for sale, the better off you're going to be. And, you know, I'll look at it from another perspective. Let's say you're not going to sell your business. Wouldn't it be great, though, if your business operated well without you being there? Isn't that more valuable to you? Can you go do absolutely. Things you want to do? If something were to happen to you where you, let's say you just get injured and you can't work in your business for 3 months.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be better to have that business run and keep paying your bills and paying your health insurance and paying everything else?
Yeah.
And when you come back, still know things are trucking along the way they should be. It's not always about selling the business. It's about getting it prepared so that it can run on its own. That's, you know, I usually use the phrase turnkey because to me, that's really what you want to make your business do. You want to either automate it enough or you want your employees involved enough that it could run well without you, and in some cases better without you, in my mind.
Yeah. I can definitely, you know, I can definitely say that, you know, there's plenty of surprise stories out there, right? I got a call one time from a woman I knew who said, hey, are you interested in buying an accounting practice? And I essentially said, okay, what are you talking about? You know, she was like my son's tutor. Like, she's not in accounting. What are you talking about? Her brother was an accountant and he passed away. He had a heart attack and just, you know, out of the blue, no one expected it. So now she's got to practice. You know, she's trying to help because the wife didn't know anything about accounting. She didn't know anything about accounting. She knew very little, but she worked with the brother on, you know, during tax season. So she's trying to basically hold the thing together with some, you know, duct tape and a couple of push pins, you know? And there was no succession plan. There was nothing in place. There was literally nothing they could do other than try to find somebody to take it over. So she was essentially, you know, trying to hold up enough that they could try to sell it to somebody, and that would be, you know, something they could use to support the wife or whatever in the family. So you never know what's going to happen, you know? And like you said, had he grown it to a certain point, had there been employees in place, had there been, sort of a takeover option, you know, doesn't necessarily mean that you have to take it, you know, have the option in place, have something in place that if something were to happen to you, you'd know that it could go this way, you know, and your family's protected. Cause now at that point, you know, if it were me, I'm done. It's not gonna, you know, none of this helps me necessarily, but I don't necessarily want to leave that to my wife and kids.
Right. You know? Well, and the other part that we touched on in the webinar was, you know, really this is more than about just you. If you have employees, that have families, I would want them to be protected. I would want to make sure that they had something to, you know, make sure that they were okay. And if I can do my job or I can actively be involved in the company every day to make sure it's going, I'd want to make sure that they have the power to do that. Because in the end, if I'm not here to take care of those folks as the business owner, then somehow something's got to happen, because otherwise the business goes away. You now have employees and families that are put out immediately. You know, and let's face it, if things go south right away, you get hit by the proverbial bus, you know, who's going to cut that paycheck that week?
Yeah.
If that's you and you're the only one that can do it, well, now somebody's not getting paid and they're counting on that money. They're also counting on any benefits they've racked up, any vacation, whatnot. If they have to find a new job, you know, that's going to be a start over process. Then there's your clients. Your clients count on you and they need you to be around. And if you're not available to them or your company's not available to them, that also creates a lot of problems for them as well, especially, you know, like manufacturing. I think most manufacturing now is more just-in-time approach. So it's not like people are sitting on tons of inventories of parts that they can get by for a couple months till they can find another supplier. Usually the supplies they're ordering are going to be utilized within that week and going to be gone at most.
Yeah.
Sometimes if you're large enough, it could be almost daily you're shipping parts out. And now all of a sudden that business drives up and you're putting your clients out on a ledge as well. So there's a lot of things you have to look at here. I strongly encourage businesses to really start, taking a snapshot of what they got going on, what they need to do. They can ask you or I any questions, and maybe that's the best way to wrap this up here. You know, what's the best way to get a hold of you if they want to kind of start looking at their business and seeing what they need to do?
Yeah, best bet is send me an email at rich@xcxo.net.
And you can get a hold of me at dan@xcxo.net. Rich, great webinar and great talking to you today. And I'm sure we'll have some interesting subjects to talk about next week.
Absolutely, 100%.
All right.
Want to boost your sales and profits, but need the talent to help you grow? XCXO is a one-of-a-kind platform to find skilled fractional executives to help develop your team into a high-performance powerhouse. Fractional leadership is a great choice when you consider the average executive-level candidate can cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars in salaries, benefits, and incentives. XCXO finds you the executive and utilizes their talents to build your team's experience, all for a fraction of the cost of a full-time C-suite leader. Contact XCXO today to fill the gaps in your leadership team. Visit xcxo.net.